Hi, this is Jennifer Kemp with KVU AM News, and today I'm doing an interview with Jerome Gold. Jerome wrote the book Paranoia and Heartbreak about his experiences working at a juvenile prison outside of Seattle for 15 years. So I was wondering, could you tell us a little bit about your book, what inspired it, and what kind of experiences does it chronicle?
I was working at an institution that I call Ash Meadow, a prison for juveniles, and I found myself under a good deal of stress. And habitually, when I'm under stress, I use a journal to kind of relieve it. And I also use a journal to try to figure things out. I find that by writing something out, it helps me to think more clearly. And so that's why I started the journal. After a few years of working there, I started thinking about writing a book, but my intention originally was to do like a book-length essay along the lines of Jonathan Kozol. He did one book, for example, called Rachel and Her Children, and I was using that as a model. I never really got started on it. I was talking about my idea with a friend of mine, and he said, well, actually, what I want to do is it should be a journal. He was not aware that I was writing a journal. So I just kind of put that on hold in my own mind, and then after I made up my mind to leave, this would be probably a year to 2 years before I actually did leave the job, I started looking at it again with the idea of editing it so as to make it into a book. I'm not sure I answered your question, did I?
Well, you definitely answered the first part, but then the second part is, what kind of experiences did you write about?
I was mostly interested, almost entirely interested in the kids themselves, because I was trying to figure them out, not only for my own job, but just because they fascinated me. Each one was kind of a combination of who I was or who I might have been or who you were or I might have been, and themselves, that it took a different road for whatever reason. So just try to be as descriptive as possible. Just keep my own values out of it, which were changing anyway. I would say that, like one boy I remember, I told him that he was the most impulsive kid I'd ever met, and he said he didn't regard himself as impulsive. He just thought faster than other people. That was my reaction, too. I laughed, too. So just little things like that I would put in, and sometimes it would be fairly lengthy in description, because things could get fairly complicated, or I would start having insights into a boy's personality or into his problems. Or kids would tell me things that were really unusual. At one point I had two kids at the same time on my caseload, each of whom had blackouts, in which they would not remember what they did during a blackout. Each of them also had, because of head injuries, had learning problems, although you couldn't tell that by talking with them. So trying to learn more about this. Each did have head injuries, but I don't know that was the cause of their problems. It's really hard to know that, but I surmise that was the reason.
So what made you decide to work at Ash Meadow, and what kept you there in spite of all the horrifying things you encountered?
I was on active duty. I was in the Army before and during Desert Storm, the first Gulf War. And I got off of active duty, and a friend of mine asked me what I was going to do for a job. And what I really wanted to do was just go on unemployment for a while and do some writing. But he convinced me I should go out to Ash Meadow and put in my job application. That would be a few months before they called me. So I did go out, and then 2 days later they called me for an interview, and a couple days after that they hired me. So I didn't get to go on unemployment. I really didn't know what the job was about. I knew it was a prison. Not very well. The biggest thing, at that time, it didn't... Now the job description says you have to be able to withstand verbal abuse. It didn't say that at that point, and that was the hardest thing, for me at least, just starting out. Kids would really get in my face. Some of them would. And so sometimes more senior staff would be protective of me, and sometimes they wouldn't. You pretty much expected to sink or swim. At least that's how it was then. It's probably the same now. I stayed with it. Well, that changed as kids got to know me, and as I got to know them, we learned how to deal with each other. And the verbal abuse, for the most part, went away. There were some periods in which I was just so fascinated with kids, I felt myself really privileged to be working there. There were some other times in which, that were so bad. Not usually because of kids, but because of people I had to work with. Most people I worked with were great, from competent to great. Sometimes I would have to work with somebody, with one or two people, that would just be impossible for me. The personality conflicts that we didn't seem to be able to get through. My expectations of them, theirs of me, just did not work. I worked with one man, for example, who kids were in a fight, and he ran off the floor and left me to handle it by myself. That's a little more than a personality conflict. That's a security conflict. Having to work with somebody like that, I often thought about quitting. But then something would happen. There'd be another kid, and I'd just get so involved with it, with studying that kid and dealing with the kid, that I would just stay with it. So really, I thought about it for years before I did leave. I did leave finally. It was a confluence of reasons. One was I had a young lady on my caseload that the administration had really jerked around, and I was unable to protect her. And that happened actually a few years before I did leave. But the memory of it and the arbitrariness of the administrator's decisions concerning her, I couldn't trust them again. And then other things happened too with other kids, that feeling of mine that they were just being arbitrary, that their own personalities were influencing professional decisions, did not leave me. It grew worse and worse. I mentioned to some people that I was thinking about leaving. I remember my boss said, "You'd better not." But I finally reached a point where I set a date for myself, and then I stuck with it.
So of the kids that you worked with, which ones were your favorites and which ones were your least favorite?
Of the kids?
Yeah, like what types of kids did you most enjoy working with and least enjoy working with?
You know, I don't think I could say favorite or least favorite based on type. So much depended on personality. I did gravitate toward kids who had done violent crimes. Not necessarily that I liked them better. It's just that I had some understanding of violence because of my experience in war. I'd been in Vietnam in combat. And so kids, who, especially gang kids, who, while the intensity of their experience of violence did not usually match mine, I could talk with them about how it felt and the various sensory perceptions of violence and how you think under certain circumstances. And they understood what I was talking about. And so that even though I had not personally been in a gang, when it came to the things that gangs did, or some of the things that gangs did, they knew that I knew what they had experienced, or something of what they had experienced. Easiest to deal with kids who had committed murder, because their sentences were so long that they, I think they just understood pretty quickly that Ash Meadow was going to be their home for a long time. And so they kind of treated it as a home. It wasn't as though they knew they would be getting out in a year. They weren't going to be getting out in a year. And so they acted as actually good models of behavior for other kids. I mean to say, there weren't any kids whose crimes really repelled me so much that I didn't want to work with them. That's true, but there were a couple of kids who had committed such horrific offenses that it was hard to get past that. But I could. I could. Not everybody could.
Well, you talk about how, like, you often see the kids as just being victims of, like, larger problems in society.
Right.
And what do you think leads up to that? And do you think there's any way that, like, they as individuals or we as a society can escape that?
I used to conduct a treatment group called Alternatives to Violence. And on one occasion, I simply asked the question, what leads to violence? And here are the things that the kids came up with that I think is accurate. One, there's violence in the household or nearby neighbors' households. They're aware of it, in other words. There's drugs in the household or nearby. There's the... They come to regard violence as normal. And there's no jobs, or there's not enough jobs. High unemployment or joblessness. And that affects... They pointed out that the kinds of crimes they did, like residential burglary or robbery, often leads to violence. So if there's a lack of money, then they will do things that may involve violence. What can we as a society do? Well, those things, we need more jobs, for one thing, both for the adults and for kids. One of the most frustrating things for counselors, I was a counselor, one of the most frustrating things for counselors is you have a kid for a year, 18 months, or 2 years, and when you release him, he's 15 or 16 years old, and he's still not old enough to work. So if he needs money, and his mother can't provide it, or his father can't or won't provide it, he's probably going to turn to crime of some sort because he can't work. So we might start thinking about juvenile work laws. I know that we as a society instituted those laws to protect juveniles from being exploited by employers, but now there's something else that's important. We should rethink that. A lot of the kids that I dealt with typically were expelled from school when they were 11, 12 years old and didn't go back. Well, that's fine for the school. I mean, they just avoid dealing with the problem. But what happens to these kids? Well, they've got all this time, and they start, instead of drifting toward the mainstream, they drift away from the mainstream toward other kids who have been marginalized. And they get in trouble with those kids. They reinforce each other's, what becomes, antisocial tendencies. We need, I suppose, a plethora of alternative schools. I know in my area these have been, as money gets tight, these are the first schools that are closed down.
Is that like the Seattle area?
Yeah, I live in just north of Seattle. I live in Everett, actually. But I spent almost 30 years in Seattle.
So at Powell's, you mentioned that you think there are two different positions on what the objective of prison is, like either to punish or to rehabilitate.
Right.
So which one do you think is the point and why?
Well, I'm firmly on the side of rehabilitation. Aside from it being more compassionate toward the prisoner, it makes good sense in a lot of ways. People get out of prison. If you treat them badly, or if you don't allow them to learn anything, if you don't encourage them to learn something that they can use when they get out to help them find a job or to further their education, or both, they're going to go back to crime because that's what they know and they have no alternatives. A lot of the kids we got couldn't read or read very badly, read at maybe a second grade level, even if they were 15, 16 years old. We could teach them to read, and sometimes we were able to teach them to read. But when I say we, I mean a combination of counselors encouraging kids and teachers using their own time because they weren't paid to do this. They weren't. This is after hours for those that did it. Very few did it. But when they would take the time, they could turn a kid around. I remember I had a kid on my case who came in. He knew some single syllable words, and that was it. And he knew how to spell his own name. So essentially, he was at first grade reading level. And within 2 or 3 months, they got them up to 4th grade reading level, and then 6th grade reading level. Just one teacher did with mine, and then I would encourage him to stick with it when he would get discouraged. And that could be done with other kids, but there was no mechanism for doing that. Teacher did it on her own. She wasn't paid to do it. She just, after school was out, she came down to the unit and worked with him. So kids, and adults too, in prison, need to be at least offered something that will help them later. This is in society's interest as well. It will keep them from doing crimes when they get out. The opposite view, that they should simply be punished. Well, being in prison is punishment enough. The worst thing, at least from the point of view of kids, I think, the worst thing about being in prison is that they're taken away from people who love them, and they're taken away from people they love. Not all of them are loved, but all of them would like to be loved, and many of them think that their family loves them when they don't. Nevertheless, they're taken away from support systems, and they're made dependent on the prison system. That in itself is punishment. Now, the prison system could be very good to them. It could feed them where they weren't getting food consistently. They were assured of being able to sleep indoors. They were given access to weightlifting and basketball and various athletic activities. They were taught, if they didn't already know, they would be taught how to interact with other people socially. Sometimes we'd get kids who'd been homeless for quite a long time, and they would have forgotten, if they knew, how to use eating utensils. So we'd have to show them how to do that. But we did show them how to do that. All this helps them later. They're punished by being sent to prison. You don't have to do anything more to them once they're there, except to teach them how to be better people, better citizens. That's my view. I know there are some people, including some of our state legislators, who take the opposite view. One woman in the legislature has said repeatedly that she doesn't think prisoners should be educated past the 8th grade. Once asked one of our administrators when we were going to start executing our prisoners, executing kids. I asked the guy who told me this, I asked him whether this guy was serious. He said, oh, yeah. He had recently been to China, and he was using them as a model.
Wow.
Wonderful.
Yeah. You talked about this a little bit earlier, but how did the different staff members treat the job, and how did the relationships between the staff members affect the work environment?
Some staff members just, I don't really know what was in their mind. It was as though that it was just a job to them, although why somebody would take this kind of job if they were simply looking for unemployment, or why they would stick with it if they were simply looking for employment. Although many left. I stayed 15 years, and I thought that was a fairly long time. And when I left, two people who had close to 30 years thanked me for helping them out, as though I was just a visitor. But some would leave after a few months, some would leave after a few years and go on to something else. And I couldn't really blame them. It wasn't for them. Others would just get really involved with it was the kids that would keep you there. Nobody had any high regard for the administration. None of the cottage staff or line staff did. But it was the kids themselves that would keep you there. One guy, I remember, said that he looked for kids for his own caseload who had a good heart. Now, he and I disagreed on what a good heart was, but nevertheless, he had something in mind. And actually, I thought he was probably the best therapist I'd ever met. I still think so. So he just liked dealing with kids who had a good heart, by his definition. This didn't mean that they hadn't committed serious crimes, because many of them had. All of them there were felons, but some crimes are more serious than others. He would look for that type of personality. Whereas I kind of like dealing with difficult kids, kids who had done really bad things and who could be difficult to manage, because I felt that I could make them less difficult to manage. if they were difficult to manage, to me that meant they were having a problem with themselves, and it was taking the form of their acting out. I felt that I was pretty good at finding out what the problem was that they were having with themselves and teaching them how to deal with it, so that they didn't get, so that hopefully they wouldn't get in more trouble. A lot of staff had problems with at least boys who had been sexually abused. So in a couple of cases, I ran a treatment group called Male Survivors of Sexual Abuse. Later, I expanded it to include sexual and physical abuse, but when I first started, it was just sexual abuse. And I would ask staff for recommendations for advice who should be in the group. And a couple of them said that kids on their caseload, nothing had happened to them, or that something had happened to them, but they didn't want to deal with it. And I would watch these kids, and finally, I would go up to them and say, tell them what the group was about and ask them if they thought they might want to be in it. And in these cases, invariably, they said, yeah. And I finally concluded that the staff didn't want to deal with it. The staff didn't want to know. And I don't think it was because the staff was, well, in one case, I think that particular staff was just plain lazy. He didn't like dealing with, he liked dealing with kids as long as they were fun, but when they were a problem, he didn't want to deal with it. The other one, I suspect there was something in her background that if she was going to deal with a kid who'd been sexually abused, she was going to have to deal with herself. And I think she wasn't prepared to do that. Now, I don't know that, but that's what I think.
Did you find race to be a salient feature of the job?
Among staff?
I guess both among staff and among the kids.
I didn't see it among staff. I take that back. There was one staff that I can recall where race was clearly a problem for him.
I guess more among the kids. Like, did you find that kids of different races tended to do different kinds of crimes, or did they, like, have a hard time relating to each other once they were in prison?
I don't think they did different types of crimes. I did. Most of the sex offenders we had were white, and I asked an administrator whom I trusted why that would be so, and she said that a sex offense is not the kind of crime where you're caught in the act. Somebody has to inform on you. And non-white people, non-white adults, are reluctant to give their children up to what they perceive as a white criminal justice system. Whereas the whites have more confidence in the criminal justice system and may well give their kids up. What was the rest of your question?
Oh, I was wondering if interactions between kids were pretty racially charged.
It could be. Off and on, there would be the threat of that. There was, I remember one boy, it was on Martin Luther King Day. I don't remember which year it was. It was in the, probably about 1997 or so. It was on Martin Luther King Day. And this one, we had two white boys in the cottage who staff and maybe kids knew that they were pretty racist. They were pretty much anti-everything that they weren't. But on ordinary interactions, kids could know about each other that they had racial biases, but they would still get along because they had to get along. But this one day, this one boy said something about it. Somebody brought on a movie. One of the staff brought on a movie about Martin Luther King, or about. No, I think it was Cry the Beloved Country, which is not about him. It's a South African movie. And this one of the racist boys said something about not wanting to watch it, and made a racial comment. Apparently, he did, and I didn't hear it. But the first thing I knew is that this black kid went after him, and then. It was a long, drawn-out thing, but we finally were able to restrain the black kid and get the white kid in his room. That was kind of extreme. That didn't happen very much. In fact, it didn't happen very much. There were two other kids. This one, the white boy I was just talking about, his friend, the other racist kid, he and this black kid were constantly looking for opportunities to hit each other. Because they despised each other. Both were racist, but in opposite ways. And they're just constantly looking for opportunities to get at each other. It was not clear who was tougher. And I don't know that it was really important to them who was tougher, but they could hurt each other. They knew that. And finally, we had to transfer one of them to another institution. There was Nathan McCall's book, Makes Me Want to Holler. It was in the school library, and one of the kids was reading it. And he had a roommate. We were overcrowded. We were overpopulated. And he had a roommate, so we had it was a black kid who was reading the book, and he had a white roommate. And the white kid said that the black kid was trying to intimidate him by reading out passages of violence from the book. The black kid said that the white kid would ask him to read out those passages, but then would get resentful when he did read them. It's hard to know exactly what was going on. Each had their own perspective. And there was no fight or anything between them, but they got really angry and couldn't live together anymore. We had a staff at that time I was supervisor at that time. We had a staff then who, without my knowledge or the director's knowledge, the director being my boss, was taking kids out of their rooms late at night, playing dominoes with them. The way I found out was the kids he would take out of the rooms were all black. The staff was black. One of the white kids objected to me because he had been allowed out of his room. That's how I found out about it. And I went to the staff and asked him about it, and he was like a kid. He just denied it until I told him what I knew, and then he said, "Well, since you already know, I'll just admit it." That was not good. He was one of the say three staff that I had to work with over the years that just made, I think, everybody's life miserable. Kids were afraid of him because he was so erratic, because he would be so arbitrary. He finally transferred to another institution.
Well, we're just about out of time. But thank you so much for doing the interview.
Well, thank you for calling. I enjoyed doing it. I hope it helps somebody.